Mario.
Hey everyone, this is John.
And
this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show 64, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we are going to talk about Nintendo 64 games as they came out sort of semi-chronologically, but also just anything Nintendo retro-related. It's, you know, a celebration of all things that are getting old as we are getting old too. Mm-hmm. So
I'm 30 next month.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God damn. Mm-hmm. Kill yourself.
I really want to. How was it for you guys?
Same as 29.
Yeah. I don't really remember much about it, honestly.
I mean, it's really, like, it's weird when people you knew from your childhood start turning 30, which is why it is fucking weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
But yeah, it's less weird for yourself.
Jeffrey's getting married.
Yeah, well, he's a loser and it's about time. I hope he listens. Mm-hmm. But tonight's big thing on the agenda is Star Fox 64. That was the big game that came out in July of 1997. But then we also have a couple other things to address that we will get to. Before we actually get into games, though, I wanted to just take a brief minute here to mention. I found something on YouTube. Like, YouTube recommended a video for me. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you're old. You like things that were popular in the 90s. Like,
oh,
yes.
You found Ernest Cline's YouTube channel?
I did not. No. Thank God.
Got it. Remember the film War Games, everybody?
God.
So, and actually, just this past May, the lead singer of Weezer, remember the band Weezer?
Rivers Cuomo.
Yeah. He did an acoustic set at just like this little like hole in the wall looking stage. Mm-hmm. And he did a bunch of just solo acoustic covers for a bunch of songs, like a lot of Weezer stuff, but also Basket Case,
nice.
Wonderwall, mm-hmm. Nice. 1979 by Smashing Pumpkins.
Cool.
Yeah, and it was really great because like the crowd was super into it. It was basically a sing along. Yeah. He was like
doing karaoke.
Yeah, he was like Raffy up there with his guitar, and everyone else was singing the songs for him. And it was really great. Mm-hmm. And it just automatically made me feel real old because I was never like, were you guys really into Weezer at all? I think I had a couple of Weezer CDs.
There's like two songs by them I like, but everything else is.
Yeah,
everybody in high school singing and making a big deal out of it, and then got overplayed, and I got sick of it.
Yeah, I think the Blue album's probably one of the 10 best albums of the 90s.
Yeah.
I think you've really got to put it up there in the pantheon of amazing albums. And
yeah, that was
Pinkerton's
one of
probably my personal favorite.
Okay.
Because it is such a tonally different album than what you... Because, you know, Blue album's got all the big hits on it, and it's
yeah.
just...
Yeah, that, really I think anthemic. That and the self-titled Weezer album, the green one,
yeah.
were the two that I had.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, Say It Ain't So. Well, that one had Hash Pipe on it. It was a big single. Mm-hmm.
Island in the Sun.
Island in the Sun.
I think Buddy Holly was on the Blue album.
It was a breezy track, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, Surf Wax America, that's a fucking jam.
But it's a stupid sweater one.
I think that was in the Blue album.
Come Undone sweater. Yeah, sweater song, parenthesis, Come Undone.
But yeah, he did a lot of songs from those. But it was really great to like just see him covering all these other songs from bands that were real popular in the mid to late 90s.
His contemporaries,
yeah,
his peers at the time.
So let's actually just move over into games from there. I got two Game Boy games.
Oh, by the way, actually, Smashing Pumpkins, they're on tour right now.
Yeah,
they're going to be playing here in Orlando. I think this coming month.
Are they actually going to be in Orlando? Yep. When I was checking tour dates, shit. When I was checking tour dates a few months ago, I thought the closest they were going to get to us was Tampa. But, hey, maybe they had a show or I missed it.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, unless... Because I was out Thursday with some friends and somebody said that they were going to go to it. And I was like, at the Amway? And they said, yeah. So, unless they maybe misheard me and it is in Tampa or something. But, yeah, it sounded like he was going to here in Orlando, going to the show.
Oh, that's awesome. So, I might have to look at that then.
And
it's one thing to, like, drive all the way out to Tampa for something like this. But if it's just right here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so
one of my favorite bands is announced a farewell tour.
Oh no.
Yeah, well they've been at it for like 10, 15 years now. That's been a long time. So they're hanging out this person. They're called Minus the Bear. They're really, really good. Hmm. But they're doing a farewell tour and I don't know why they chose it, but one of the only show they have in Florida is in Ybor City, which is
I never even heard of that.
It's in Tampa. It's not really its own city. It's just sort of like this debauched, weird place that's like maybe a half mile by a half mile.
Oh, like St. Petersburg.
Kind of. Well, St. Petersburg is like its own town. Ybor City is just like...
I was just taking a shot at St. Pete.
You just got to go there. It is weird. It's like new. It's kind of like what you would think New Orleans would be like, maybe. It's like if Tampa had a little baby New Orleans.
Okay.
In it, where just fucked up things happen all the time.
And there's people really into voodoo?
What? No, it's just a rowdy nightlife kind of place. Okay. And there's a lot of venues because bands play there.
Hmm. Gotcha.
So...
That's all right. Fun. Well, there's a couple of Game Boy games that I just wanted to talk about real quick. Mm-hmm. Because we hardly ever talk about the Game Boy. This is a weird point in the lifespan of the Game Boy. We've mentioned this before. It's, you know, the Game Boy is long in the tooth. This thing came out in 1988. It's 1997. Pokemon's not out yet. So it's a lot. The offerings of the Game Boy has are
few like and far between. The Methuselah of consoles.
Right. Yeah. Well, and like, and when Pokemon comes out, it's going to breathe life into that system for another 3 years.
No, Game, that's crazy.
Yeah, Game Boy will last from 1998 to 2001.
Yeah.
The only thing to survive the entirety of the 90s was the Game Boy. So there are a couple of games. Money Idol Exchanger came out on the Game Boy in June of 1997. This one was developed by a developer called Face. Could not find any other information about them. It was published by SNK. And this one actually was only released in Japan. It was originally an arcade game that came out in, I think it was January of 97. And it was ported to the Game Boy in June and later came out on the PS1 as well. And it's a falling puzzle game, sort of akin to like Bust a Move, like the game where you have like everyone's played like some sort of version of this. You have like a little can on the bottom, and there are different colored orbs up top, and you need to fire.
This is an anime.
Oh yeah, and you need to fire. In Bust a Move, you fire a purple orb from the cannon into like purple orbs up top, and it causes all the pieces to fall down. Mm-hmm. So in Money Idol Exchanger, it has to do more with matching numeric values on these orbs rather than matching colors.
So it's like 1, 5, 10,
right.
50, 100.
So this is a good way to teach your kids how to count.
Sure. And actually, I think it was...
Even the commercial said, just go get money from mommy's wallet. Take it to the store and I'll teach you a copy of Money Idol Exchanger.
And then even the game has some sort of like educational value and like how to count currency, because it is how different denominations of yen are in 1, 5, 10, 50, 100, 500, which are what they are in the game here. And basically, what you need to do is match numbers up. So you want to put all the ones together, and when you get 5 ones together, they'll become a 5. Mm-hmm. If you match 2 fives together, they'll become a 10. Oh, and so on and so forth to make all... And what you want to do is get it to the highest denominations possible before you start eliminating stuff.
These characters look ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah,
one of them is like in a little bear outfit, and she's even got the ears, so she is a bear.
Nothing too risque, as far as I've encountered with that game.
Gosh, I hope so. These are all like 8-year-olds.
Right. So, as far as I could tell, you can only group together identical values, so you can only match ones with ones, and then like in order to build up to a 100, you have to match 250s. You don't do 10-10s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and it's pretty much just an infinite running like puzzle. You keep going until someone loses because the main emphasis is like, going to be on a player versus player. And when you play the computer, you keep going until the computer loses, and you lose because it's like on a timer. It will keep filling up with more coins until eventually it just fills up all the way, and you have no more moves left. So there's a few different modes. There's the arcade mode. There's a player versus player. So yeah, I mean, nothing.
They put a lot of attention to detail on these sprites.
Yeah.
This one kind of looks like D.Va.
And actually, when you play, like, of course, it's monochromatic. Yeah. Monochromatic when you play it on a Game Boy.
But it's a Neo Geo as well. That's what I'm
right,
there's a lot of Neo Geo colored art on it.
But when you put it into a Super Game Boy, like plug it into your Super Nintendo, it actually does have color backgrounds and cropping. Like, the field of play itself is still monochromatic, but you do get some color in there when you play it on a TV. So yeah,
I remember that was the thing about like Dr. Mario, when you play Dr. Mario on the Game Boy, that all that they did was have like a solid black, white, or a literal checkered pattern of pixels to give you a sense of color.
It's like one pixel across.
It's a pretty bare bones, pretty minimal.
Yeah, but another game that came out on the Game Boy, this one was July of 97. This one actually did come to North America. This one's Kirby Star Stacker. And this one is another puzzle game. It was developed by HAL Laboratories, published by Nintendo, of course. And this one's actually available on the 3DS Virtual Console. You can go get it for $3, which I did.
I feel like we need to bring it up every time. Again, this is Kirby as in the pink puffball and not baseball legend Kirby Puckett.
Exactly, yes. Okay. Kirby the Nintendo character, not Kirby the baseball player.
Okay, just making sure. I'm not interested.
Good. I played through a few modes of this game. It is, again, akin to a falling block puzzle game like a Tetris. And typically, in these falling block puzzle games, your goal is to eliminate your blocks, right? Like Dr. Mario, Tetris, the goal is to keep the field clear by matching things together. Mm-hmm. So in this game, the blocks that are falling are pairs of Kirby characters. And I think there's variations of four different characters.
And there's two. There's one that's like a little hamster.
Yeah, a little hamster. I think that's Rick. And then there's a fish.
Star, maybe?
Well, the star is something different. I'll get to that. There's Kine, who is a fish. And then Ku, who is an owl. And there's one more, I think. But I can't remember what it is.
Looks like there's a bird.
That's Ku. He's like an owl bird.
I can't really make out this is very low res.
Anyway.
But anyway, yeah.
What you're doing, as they fall down, you know, you can change like which side the animal's on. You can change the orientation to vertical. You can rotate the piece as you would in a Tetris. And what you're just doing is matching two characters together to eliminate them from the field of play. All you need is to match two of the same character and they disappear. However, the goal is not to eliminate the character blocks. The goal is to actually...
Summon the devil.
The goal is to summon the devil.
I thought so.
And okay. You summon the devil by accumulating stars. To clear a stage, it will tell you you need to accumulate these stars. You need to accumulate this many. It's 8, 16, what have you.
I'm looking at some gameplay here. It just takes up the stage once they get converted into stars.
What happens is stars will take up the field of play, and in order to bank them, you have to remove the stars from the field of play. Mm-hmm. And to remove stars from the field of play, you have to have two matching characters on either side, vertically or horizontally, from the stars.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
So okay. what you're trying to do is get characters far apart from each other and a bunch of stars in between. Now, you don't get stars as falling block pieces very often. So there's a couple of different things you can do in order to get stars. Like one,
can the star complete the chain? So you've got the two faces that you want, and then two stars, and then there's a vacant spot. If you drop a star in there, you complete the chain in the same way that you could... If you had stars already, you could drop a face, and it completes the chain, too.
Exactly.
Oh,
yes.
That's cool.
Yeah. So what can happen is you can get a star that drops. It's rarer than getting just a regular character block. But also, when you put together combos of eliminating characters, the game will send some stars to fill in gaps for you. So if you have a block that eliminates two different types of characters, the game will be like, oh, cool. Here's a couple of stars that we're going to throw in there. And if it can fill in any gaps, like if it can bridge any gaps between two characters, it'll, you know, continue your combo. These stars don't stay in the field of play. It's like they're there if it eliminates something cool, but if they don't serve a function, they'll disappear. And what'll happen is if those stars are able to fill in a gap and eliminate things, those things will of course disappear. And I'm like, okay, cool. Here's more stars. And as long as more stuff keeps getting eliminated, they'll keep on throwing stars in there until, you know, you're out of moves. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not something that I've able to pull off myself, but every 4 to 6 levels that I've played of this game, they'll say, okay, here, like at the beginning of the level, like, here's your first piece. This is where you should drop it. And I say, okay. And I drop it. And that's the only move I need to make because then like stuff will get eliminated. Here are stars, more stuff gone. Here are stars. You cleared the stage in 15 seconds. Good for you. Nice. You followed instructions. But I would assume that there is probably a solution to every stage or drop this thing here and this is how you win. Okay. So it'd actually be interesting to see like some high level play for just like the
people
arcade
that have optimized
mode.
The
people that have cracked the code and know where to drop the things.
But is there randomness to it?
I don't know.
Or are all the stages kind of preset?
I played through all the normal and hard stages and I haven't replayed them. So it does. I mean, I don't have a discernible pattern just from the rotation of pieces they send you. But yeah. I don't know. It's not. It's a Game Boy game. It's not super complex. Maybe there is some randomness to it, or maybe it's just like, here's your puzzle. Find the solution. Mm-hmm. But, and anyway, it's a neat little twist on a falling block puzzle game. It's on a system with just this cornucopia of puzzle games to pick from. So this one probably gets a little forgotten in the mix. But, you know, you can get it for $3 on a 3DS Virtual Console. So
would you believe it?
Why not? Mm-hmm. So, one other game on this retro show before we get into some N64 stuff. I know, Ryan, this is kind of a curveball on you. But for the Super Nintendo of June of 1997, Harvest Moon.
Oh, no way. Yep. Isn't that great?
So here we are.
What a wonderful game. I didn't realize. Wow.
Yeah, developed by Acuus. I'm unsure how to pronounce this developer's name. I couldn't find any information on this developer. Published by Natsume in North America. Yep. Nintendo actually published in Europe, which was a surprise to me. Huh. You can get this game for $190 used on Amazon.
That's a deal.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
The original Harvest Moon Super Nintendo is only available on the Super Nintendo. You cannot get this game downloaded or ported any other way.
Yeah. It's a wonderful game. I really like it a lot. I know Wes thinks it's a total waste of time.
Wes has never played it.
Yeah.
You should.
Really? You never played it?
It's gonna...
No.
Or you just hate agriculture?
Pretty much.
And the ladies. Right? Because that's the game.
That's what the game is about, farming and fucking.
Yeah, and wooing the women in town. That's what it's really all amounts to.
Oh, so it's farmers only, the video game.
Right. So, yes. So can you, like, be this Casanova and, like, try to woo multiple ladies in the town? Oh.
Oh, there's multiple different endings. You can end, you can either kind of give your heart to one of the four women, mm-hmm. or you can get the Casanova. I think it is actually called Casanova, so that's okay. Get all, you basically, like, in all of those, like, relationship sim, dating sim things, it's like, you know, you gotta take the steps, and then, you know, they go from liking you to mm-hmm. loving you, and then it's like, you make your final decision on who's the one you want.
Hmm.
Now, I have one very important question.
What's up?
Is there face touching?
I mean, there's you touching their faces with your hand
on the screen.
You smudge it, you smudge it a little bit, but it's worth it.
Okay.
You know, you kind of just, you put yourself into it. Feels good. Yep, so... For the...
How many times do you slide it into your pants?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's it. You can if you want. I mean, but that's really just to keep it warm. But anyway, so... So you basically don't dedicate yourself to one of the women. You just sort of accomplish these small tasks for them. And then at the end of it, you kind of get the reward of having all four of them. You kind of... You know? You're not like, going... They're not putting a ring on each four of those four fingers or anything like that.
Do they usually
sort of assume that you have this ongoing romantic... relationship with all of them.
So there's farm management.
That's the principle of the game.
You're planting crops and harvesting them.
To give them items to make them happy.
Okay.
As you are with all of the town folk, even if you're not trying to fuck them.
Is there any, like, sort of, like, home management? Are you, like, building a house or something? Like,
there's, you have your house.
Okay.
And then it's your farmland around it. And then you also have pens. If I remember correctly, you build these pens to keep your animals. So you can have cows... chickens, which create eggs and milk, and then you sell those off. You know, it's very it's fun gameplay. It's a really, if we're talking about it on the Super Nintendo, I mean, it's, you know, there's a reason it's $200 a cartridge. It's there is a genuine reason to go back and play this game. It is very fun, and I know they've made a million other Harvest Moon games and other farming simulators. You know, but this one, it's got a lot of character, and especially if you're a Nintendo fan, you really should give it a look. They're not going to give you a fucking sword. You don't get a handgun. You're a farmer, and you're going to try to get some ladies. It's okay.
Is there a type of romance when it's at gunpoint?
You're farming and get some ladies.
So what I was eventually getting at is, like, do the women that you're wooing eventually move into the house with you?
You get individual endings for all of them. Because I believe it's only supposed to take place over a handful of seasons. I believe the game is supposed to take place over a full year, if I'm not mistaken.
So
and
is it like...
You have the four seasons in which you, are you know, farming, tilling the earth, planting your crops to harvest, and then at the same time, again, going into town to just talk to people.
I mean, visually, this game doesn't look that bad.
Yeah.
So there's always an expiration date on the things. You have to choose your actions very deliberately.
Because there is no permanent, like, state of the game that can exist. You're going through it one play session at a time. So that's kind of the replay value in it, is the fact that you have these four women. So
that's interesting, because it seems like it doesn't happen a lot, even with Japanese games, but it seems to be something that's more... prevalent in Japanese developed games where you have like this expiration date. You have this ticking clock. You see it in like Majora's Mask or Persona. Yeah,
I was just gonna say Majora's Mask.
Shenmue. Where you have these games, like, there is a definite end that is coming, so... And in Majora's Mask, it cheats a little bit, because, like, you know, it's just reset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. That's a... Maybe it provides good closure, also. Hmm. It doesn't, you know, put you in this state of, like... You know, like in Final Fantasy X or whatever it is, like, where you get everything done, and then you just choose not to finish the game by not doing the last boss. It's like... You know, that's the idea, is that you want to complete the story and have had this full life of this farmer.
Wes, what is it like to do everything in Final Fantasy X? Mm-hmm. Tell us.
It takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
takes a toll. I've done everything in Final Fantasy X. I can tell you, it feels wonderful.
I cannot honestly say I've done everything. I have never completed Lulu's ultimate weapon or Kamari's.
I got them all. I got all the ultimate weapons.
Bolts and... Fuck those butterflies.
I won the Blitzball title.
Yeah.
What else is there to do?
Did you go through that arena, like all those arena battles?
At the monster thing?
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the monster collecting?
Yeah.
Some of those get, like,
did that too,
nuts.
Buddy.
God damn.
Look, I don't like Final Fantasy games, but I fucking crushed Final Fantasy X for whatever reason.
Oh, really great battles. Like, the battles are super fun in that game.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're all right. I don't know, I remember playing it for all these other random reasons. I don't know if that was a thing.
I really liked 10.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I don't know why Blitzball stands out.
I
really enjoyed Blitzball. I don't know.
It's super addictive.
Once you know what to do,
it's quick. Yeah.
You get to a certain point where your team's strong, and you go, alright, let's go make these guys feel foolish. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just collecting the ultimate weapons was actually genuinely fun. I don't remember any of them. Like, the toughest one was actually Kamari's, I think, even though it's probably the shortest.
Those fucking butterflies.
Very, very difficult.
I hate that.
Yeah, it's if it was a top down stage and you could kind of trace your character a little better, it wouldn't be so bad, but since it's, you know, you're kind of watching it from this.
Yeah, the camera angles are always changing.
Yeah, like you can't really tell.
There's a couple of ones that are traps. Like as soon as the camera angle changes, it's right the fuck in front of you.
Yeah. That was cool. And yeah, Lulu's is just mind numbing. It's the easiest technically.
I don't care enough.
Yeah, there's
Lulu's.
Actually.
I really don't. Because Eunice is always easy to do. And when I get done with her sphere path, I just take her straight into Lulu's, and once that happens, Lulu's pointless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two good reasons to keep her around.
I know the ones you're talking about. this has been the PS2 podcast, so...
Yeah,
well, let's get into
some... No, I played it on a modded Game Boy Advance.
All right, let's get into some N64 games.
I love that game portable.
Yeah, me too.
So, in July of 1997, we got an N64 game, Dark Rift.
Yeah, we did. One of a slew of fighters that they were going to throw at us.
Yeah, we've talked about, at least two other fighters to this point.
Killer Instinct, right?
I do not know Dark Rift. I have no knowledge of this game.
So, we've talked about Killer Instinct Gold. Actually, I think that's the only fighting game that we've talked about so far.
Probably the one that we've actually reviewed, but there have been a bunch of other ones. Either that have come out or...
Yeah, there was
a Mortal Kombat collection.
Oh, that's right. Oh, War Gods is a game that came out. We didn't really talk about that one.
Yeah, War Gods as well.
Anyway, so... Dark Rift, this one was developed by Kronos Digital Entertainment, which is a game developer that was founded in 1992. But they closed shop shortly after releasing a game called Fear Effect 2, which was on the PlayStation 1. That was in 2001.
Okay.
So it didn't last quite a decade. Dark Rift was published by Vic Tokai, which is a Japanese telecommunications company that got into game development in the mid-80s, but basically got out of game development in 1997, shortly after this game came out.
Yeah, was this the thing that pushed them out of the market?
I don't know.
Was this game kind of a failure?
Well, I think it's certainly a time of transition for video games as they move into 3D. I wouldn't be too surprised as we're talking about these games for over the next few years. We see a lot of companies and developers that just kind of fold up shop because they didn't quite take the transition well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It could just be that game, like they could have had a management changeover that didn't see game development as part of their future anymore.
Yeah.
So, could be any number of reasons, but Dark Rift itself It's notable for being the first N64 game to run at 60 frames per second. 64 frames per second would have been appropriate.
But, I mean, you know, you're rendering trash.
Yeah. This game, it doesn't hold up visually, does it?
No, this is really bad. I'm watching a video on it right now, because I've never actually seen this. But this, that looks super bad.
There's 10 playable characters, none of which are particularly memorable.
I mean, there's a guy with a scythe sword. It's a scythe, but it's also a sword. Like, it's huge.
Or the sword lady. Or the woman with the two things in her hands. You know? It's
like,
you
there's, like, an ethereal character, like a ghost guy.
Yeah, I actually just got to him on the video. Yeah.
So there's that thing. I think the other notable thing about this game is that you can, like, pivot around your enemy as if, like, you're... Because you are moving in a 3D space.
Tekken style, yeah. You have a kind of a vertical... You have a jump and then kind of a sidestep that you can do.
Which is not something that we were able... I don't think you could do that in Killer Instinct, which is the other fighting game we've
reviewed. No, Killer Instinct didn't let you do that.
The combat seems pretty sluggish.
There are combos that you can do, and the combos are important, but when we were playing through the game, like, the first, just running through a standard arcade mode, the first few enemies didn't really put up much of a fight, and after that, like...
It got really, really tough really quick, yeah. Like, the first boss, like, or the first, I remember the first fight, like... I don't even remember them even trying to fight.
No, they just kind of stood there.
They were a little punching bag for us. I mean, the second one, they actually kind of started trying to jab back at us, and it's like, okay, you're fucking whatever. But the next fight, they actually kind of started to challenge you, really, and then the next fight after that, I feel like we're like 4 or 5 fights in, it was brutally difficult.
Do you remember if it was like a strong or quick, medium, fierce type of attacks, or was it high-low?
I mean, if they were... They didn't do a very good job of spelling out it through animations. Because this is a weapon game. I mean, there's like a game for the SNES we talked about a year ago called Weapon Lord.
Yes.
And Weapon Lord is a game that's unique in that it's built entirely around the fact that you have weapons. Like, you're short, medium, fierce, and all that. There's not, like, kicks and stuff. It's really what you're going to do with your weapon. So if you've got a big battle axe or a sword or something, it's all driven through that. And in this game, it seems like they give them these weapons, but then it's also about, like, these other attacks. So I feel like maybe that's what it's supposed to be, is that you have upper body attacks and lower body attacks. I don't know. I just remember it, like, stumbling into the occasional combo and it looking okay, but...
Yeah.
Tricky. I don't remember exactly the button layout. The N64 does not help you to kind of remember how buttons are laid out. It's an unconventional control scheme, so...
Was this a game where we used the D-pad? I think this was a game where it gave you the option of using the analog stick or the D-pad. Yeah. I think I was pretty much using the D-pad most of the time.
When it comes to fighters, unless it's a literal arcade cabinet, I would much prefer a D-pad.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't think there's too much else to say about this game, do you?
For that one interesting technical achievement of it doing 60 FPS, like, that's cool. But everything about this game is so fucking primitive.
They did use motion capture for the animations.
Fucking great. Mortal Kombat used motion capture. Creaming our jeans over that, I don't think so. You know?
No, not anymore, we're not.
So, I mean, yeah, there's all these cool stuff. And also, I think that this is, again, more about them wanting to play around with technology than it is them wanting to build a competent fighter.
I did read a little bit about the founder of Kronos Digital Entertainment talked about this game and just kind of like the fortunes of his company in general, and they kind of got tasked, hired to make a fighting game. They weren't really interested in making a fighting game from the context of what he's saying, but they kind of got hired to do this because they were one of the few companies who could get a fighting game running on the N64 so early in the life cycle.
There was a game called that came out on the SNES too, called Balls 3D. I don't remember this one.
I think you've mentioned this one before.
It's, I think a lot of that is sort of a... It is a bare-bones, again, tech demo-ish sort of thing, where they wanted to show that if we don't fully render skins on things, can we just simply have the little dots like you would see? Like,
oh, yes.
You know when you're watching a film and they show the behind-the-scenes with the CG people and they're all using little dots?
Yeah.
And they're just mapping out these bare-bone 3D textures? That's all Balls 3D was. And they managed to actually make a competent fighting game out of it, even though there was no art to it at all. It was literally just little bots. And then you watch this, where it's like they found a way to render some really complex stuff onto it, and then fundamentally make a shit fighter. And again, it is super. The inputs feel very laggy, like you were talking about. Mm. You know, that's the one thing you cannot do. You want an as close to exact interaction with your player and the thing on the screen.
Yeah, kind of like you don't. What was it like? You were pressing the button, and you feel like the character wasn't reacting, or was it just that the characters had such lumbering movements of themselves?
It's probably more the latter than the former. I don't know if it was necessarily that I hit a button and then there's literally just this massive delay, or if it's just the way that it's animated to actually take a long time to simply do anything.
Yeah,
that I just I don't know. Like this, just there's nothing about this game that really seems of interest aside from a footnote technical achievement.
Okay, well let's move on to something that's actually good and worth talking about. Star Fox 64.
Yeah,
came out in July 1997 for the Nintendo 64. This one was developed by Nintendo EAD and published by Nintendo, of course. Directed by Takano Shimizu.
Uh-huh.
Yes, nailed it. He also directed Donkey Kong 94 for the Game Boy, Pokemon Stadium for the N64, Mario Sunshine he went on to direct. He produced a couple more games as well, but hasn't really been in the creative side at Nintendo for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was, of course, produced by Shigeru Miyamoto. You may have heard of him. So, little bit of backstory. Star Fox 2, we've talked about before on the Super Nintendo show, that was canned near completion. The game was almost done because Miyamoto wanted to move the series onto the next-gen hardware, which is the N64. Specifically because he wanted to have like those all-range dogfight modes, and he also wanted to have multiplayer.
And it was a bad game, man.
Star Fox 2?
Yeah.
Well, it was incomplete. I wouldn't go as far to say like this is a bad game. It was an incomplete game. I don't think you can call an incomplete game a bad game, because we don't know if it would have been released as that product.
This sandwich is missing meat.
Oh, so
that's a bad sandwich.
You got a sandwich in alpha.
But you went back. But you went back and took that sandwich from the cook before he was done.
Yeah.
So it's your fault it's a bad sandwich. That's why it's an imperfect analogy.
Eating the raw chicken meat.
You demanded the sandwich from the cook, but the cook was like, no, it's not done. All right, fine, here it is. And then the cook brought it
to us. All I'm saying is that you're wrong for calling the game bad. The game isn't bad.
What game?
Star Fox 2.
Yeah.
It's incomplete.
I agree with Wes. I'm just kidding.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Star Fox 2. A game that was...
I would save that for my ringtone. That never happens. John texted me, I agree with Wes.
Wow, so wait, we're jumping from Star Fox 2 to Star Fox 64. We missed 62 installments of this game?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. But Star Fox 64 is effectively a remake of at least the narrative of the Super Nintendo game. It is a retelling of the same story, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Nope.
It does have added stages, of course. It reworks stages. They're not the exact same layouts. The general structure of the game, however, is very similar, where you're progressing through 7 missions till you get to the end. And there are different things you
can
do.
Same crew, too, right?
Same crew. Mm-hmm. There are different things you can do in stages in order to branch off and play through different missions in order to get to that same end. So, they're mostly on-rails levels, as in the Super Nintendo game. It does have the all-range mode like we talked about before, as well as some new vehicles. You can play as the Landmaster tank in a couple levels. There's also a submarine vehicle for one level. And they behave similarly to the R-Wings, where, you know, you're on rails, you're constantly moving forward in one direction. They're not as mobile, of course, because the tank is on the ground. It cannot move down into the ground. And the submarine has lock-on torpedoes as opposed to bombs, and you have infinite of those. So a lot of times with the submarine, the idea is shoot around to find your target, and then once your laser locks onto a target, just fire torpedoes. And it's also an interesting level structure because your underwater is very dark and your torpedoes are also your like light beacons that you fire out. So Miyamoto actually originally wanted the R-Wing to transform into like a more human-like, like mech sort of, I suppose, vehicle.
Unheard of. Japanese game developer wanting to make mechs.
Well, it's actually interesting because in Star Fox 2, the R-Wing does transform into like this little chicken
Doesn't
walker.
It? Yeah, there's a little chicken walker.
Yeah. Which comes back in Star Fox Zero.
Uh-huh.
But he wanted to go with the more mech human form thing in this particular game. The development team didn't like it. So he went to them and was like, okay, well, if you don't like it, come up with something better.
Here's
they were like, here's a tank, here's a submarine. And he's like, okay, do those.
Can I pitch you an idea?
Yes.
So, Star Fox and crew have to come to the planet Earth
okay.
to solve a problem that the planet Earth has with a witch on the moon who is summoning Zords. And then the Power Rangers and them have to team up to fight this menace.
I'd watch that.
I think I'd be about it.
I'd watch this.
There's an Asian woman on the moon summoning monsters on Earth.
But only if Slippy dies in the first episode.
Oh, I think that happens, right? Like, when she throws her spear, that her staff or whatever, down onto it, it just
impales Slippy. Like, each episode, he, like, keeps on decaying to literally just a frog skeleton impaled on a sword.
There you go.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. So the team came up with the Landmaster and the submarine. Of course, that's what ended up in the game. They actually designed... There's one stage where he plays a submarine, and they actually designed multiple underwater stages where he plays a submarine. But it slowed down the pace of the game too much, so they either ditched ideas or combined them all into one stage.
So do they have two new characters? There's a dog girl and a little cat girl.
There are new that's Bill and Cat. The dog is
Bill is probably not Bill. A girl.
Yeah, right. So
like gave it away.
They are new characters, but they're not playable. They're not part of your team. They're NPCs,
okay.
of sorts.
Because, they ever establish how, like, you have these anthropomorphic animals, human things that are just, like...
No, they don't address it.
Like, it's there as a reference point for the player, where it's like, I know what a fox is. Uh-huh. I've seen a bird before. It's like, that's a frog. I've seen a frog. Like, but how did we get to the point in the future where mankind seems to cease to exist, and we all take animal forms?
A lot of,
They don't address it.
It's PETA.
I may be overthinking this.
It's PETA. A lot of interspecies mingling.
Oh, okay.
And, things got a little weird.
Mm-hmm. The R-Wing itself, that you play as throughout the majority of the game, has some new maneuvers. In the Super Nintendo game, you can do things like speed up and brake. And in this one, you can also use those, the C buttons, the yellow buttons on the controller there, to do things like U-turns. And somersaults, things that are more useful in all your all-range dogfight modes. Just like some general controls. This is, again, a game that you're not using the D-pad. You pretty much have one hand on the analog stick and the Z-trigger in the back, and then the other hand for the buttons and the shoulder button, the right shoulder button. Z-button effectively acts as your left shoulder button. You tap it a couple times to do a barrel roll, and then you do the same with the right shoulder to do a barrel roll.
Mm-hmm.
You have your fire button, and then your bomb button, your special button. And then you're using two of the C buttons. So you're effectively have four face buttons.
Okay.
But
What do the C buttons do?
One is a boost, and then the other is a brake. And then you can also use those in combination with the analog stick. Like, if you pull back and boost, it will do a U-turn, and if you pull back and brake, it will do a somersault. Or that might be reversed. I can't remember.
So
I think it's pull back and boost, you'll do the backflip.
Okay.
The somersault.
So does your boost expire?
Like, yes.
You have like a
what it is,
tank of boost?
Yeah, and you can hold it down and use all the tank, but then it'll just fill back up.
Then you just have a natural momentum in the game, mm-hmm. like that the ship just flies, and then the only time you can control the forward, the velocity exactly. of the ship is with the boost, or then slow it down with the brake.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. The game is always on rails. You always have like your standard speed, and then you can manipulate your speed by using those buttons.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know. You know, I've never been a big Star Fox guy, so I feel like I asked probably the most mundane questions.
This game is wonderful.
Star Fox 64 is probably the... Like, if you're going to play only one Star Fox game out of the entire series,
it's going to be this one.
It's the one to go with. It's mm-hmm. it's a good introduction to how Star Fox works. And the thing is with these different techniques, the game doesn't really do anything to introduce you to these techniques through just, like, the level design as you're playing through. There are points where you want to do things like a break or speed up throughout the first couple levels, but doing things like somersaulting and U-turning, that's not really important until you get to like the all-range mode, like dog fights.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are points in the game where they're like, okay, now we're letting you off the rail. You have this arena, and you got to accomplish these goals, destroy like these radio towers or fight this other team. Because this is where they introduce Star Wolf, which is like your rival team of mercenaries.
Yeah,
everybody got like a pig and
Wolf,
lizard,
wolf, Pygma, Leon, and Andrew. Yeah, are in this game.
One's even named Leon. I was just about to say.
What's Andrew?
It's like the Stars Bravo team.
Andrew is a monkey. He's Andross's nephew.
Again, what's the deep? You're feeding into this question that I literally just asked you. Like, where are humans in all this?
Why did they leave at birth?
Do we choose which animal we want to be? Like, because they're all, and there's no, you can tell there's no interbreeding either. There's no like half frog, half wolf looking thing ever.
I don't know if that'd be terrifying or cool.
I think it would be terrifying. Like, I wouldn't want to deal with that at all.
Half pig, half fox. That'd be disgusting.
If a wolf like it just leap like a frog, like that'd be what the.
Again, it makes me think we choose this. It makes me think that there's some sort of body modification, some sort of genetic tampering that we're doing to convert ourselves into animal form.
Man bear pig.
I think it's man bear pig. That would be great if, just as a joke, like man bear pig swoops into the scene with like the little thing. Yeah, it's just like ready to fight.
Eggs healthy or
puts a spray paint on the side of his ship.
Yeah. So this like you just mentioned, is the first appearance of Star Wolf, and I found like the all range mode dogfight is kind of annoying. What did you think, Wes?
It depends on the ones. Like the straight fight in the beginning of the game was a lot of fun. The harder one near the end, right before the final boss, was brutal.
Well, that one, like at least in one of the paths you take, you only have to fight two of the members.
Yeah.
Of Star Wolf.
I mean, there's three of those fights in the game where you're fighting Star Wolf and his gang. One of them, you're actually trying to destroy something on a ship while they're fighting you.
Yes.
And that one's pretty intense. But there's also a couple of other little dogfights. There's actually a free range boss fight in the first level. It's a secret path off the side.
Was that free range?
That is a free range.
Hmm. I played through that. I don't. God.
That's a free range. No, I don't think it's a free range. You're just going back and forth.
Because that's the one where because he'll like pass over you. Because that's the one where you follow Falco through the waterfall.
Yeah, he's like on the ground and everything like that. You're just going back and forth across him. Hmm. And there's a free range one that's on this one level that is really cool. It's like an all out just war. There's a bunch of ships flying around.
Chaos going. Yeah.
Like this mothership drops, and you have to break like the doors off of it, and then like it exposes its core, like Independence Day. You fly right up it, like
Randy Quaid goes in, and
I'm back. Yeah, it's the whole thing. Which I had that flashback every time I crashed into that core.
It was a great moment in cinema.
But that was a really fun level. I mean, I like the dogfights.
Okay.
Except for that last one. That last one was brutal.
I think like as you play the game, you get to practice these things. It probably becomes a little bit more obvious, or you get used to the way that the members of Star Wolf are going to move around. I just found it kind of annoying because whenever I would like get them on screen and try to like actually tail them, like it is really difficult. You just kind of have to get like a couple shots in. And then turn around and try to get a couple more shots, and it's difficult.
Those dogfights, the later ones are really rough because you only get like one, maybe two shots off them, and then they're gone.
Again. God, yeah,
like, it takes so long to get through that fight.
And then like by the time you like flip around and do a U turn, they flipped around too, and they're heading like a lot of times it just feels like a jousting match.
The early dogfight was fun because you had more opportunities to fight them. It was a little easier and everything. I think it was a cool mechanic, and then
as I was playing through that one, I kind of like got the feeling that I wanted to go after the ones that were tailing some of the other members of Star Fox. Mm-hmm. Because like, hey, he's following Pepe, let me go help Pepe out, that way I can actually get behind this other ship. But see, then like that's one where you don't have to beat Star Wolf to progress. You're on a timer, and if you beat Star Wolf, it takes you on a different branching path.
Yep.
Whereas if you don't beat Star Wolf, they just bail out and like, okay, well, now I'm just going to continue the easy path in the game. So I think if they gave you more time there to actually figure out how to handle this thing, I think it might be a little bit more understandable. Yeah, but
some of the free roam maps were really fun, but that last one was absolutely brutal.
Hmm. So, like I mentioned before, it is a remake, so you have the original team there. You got Slippy, Falco, and Pepe.
You didn't discuss anything with the tank.
Oh, go ahead. What do you want to talk about the Landmaster?
We discussed the submarine a little bit, which I hate that level.
I was okay with it.
I suck with that thing.
It took a little while to figure out how to deal with the boss. But actually, I didn't progress past that level. Like, I was fighting the boss, and then
why did they have to go underwater in the first place?
There was context for it in the narrative. I skipped over it. I don't know.
The humans that chose to become fish.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Crab people.
Okay. Great.
For the Landmaster level, I thought it was so much fun. That's one of my favorite levels in that game.
Do you remember how to hover?
Yeah, it was like both of the shoulder buttons, I believe.
Oh, fuck. God damn it.
I believe that's
I couldn't how you figure do it out.
And if you press one, like, you can do, like, even like a side hover. Like, yeah. You won't completely go off.
You can
pop on two wheels.
Your shoulders.
You're like a lowrider or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Like, if you see a rock coming at you, and you're not going to get around it completely, you can just pop your side jets and kind of, like,
move
right past it.
Well, that's how, like, yeah, you do the sharper turns. Is you use the shoulders, or rather, like, the right shoulder and the Z button. And then also, that's how you double tap, and that's how you do your rolls with the tank as well.
Yep.
But it's directional, so double tapping Z will roll you left, double tapping R will roll you right.
Yep.
But I never thought to press them both together.
Yeah, and then they just up you go. Mm. But that level was so much fun. It was there's like a tank you're chasing through the thing as well you can blow up.
Which Landmaster
was pretty tough.
I don't think I got to that. There's a couple Landmaster levels.
Really?
There's one where, and this is just in like the standard easy path. There's one where Slippy crashes down onto a planet. You go after Slippy.
Yep. It's kind of like a barren sand dune kind of area. And then you're like kind of like fighting him. He's trapped in like this monster's arms.
Mm-hmm. And you actually have to free him before you can actually beat the boss.
But there's another one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, there's definitely another one, but I didn't play it this playthrough.
I believe there's like a tank that you're chasing through this level, and you're blowing it up as you're chasing it. That one was really cool.
Hmm.
I remember the game right. It's been years since I played that one.
But anyway, so you get these other members of your team. They can also take damage. They can be shot down. If they are shot down in this game, they have to sit out a mission, and then they can come back in. And then you also do get a little bit of health. I think you get like 25%. Health replenish to your teammates after every mission.
The Forever Train, that's the name of the mission.
Okay. Are you chasing a train? Is that what it is?
Yeah, you're chasing a train through this thing and blowing like parts of it up as you're chasing it through and trying to get through this level. And then at the end of it, I think like the boss just comes out of it or something. Like I can't remember.
If the train transforms into a boss.
A giant mech? Yeah, you're literally just...
A giant mech in this game? What?
You're literally just chasing this train through this level.
Nice.
It's really cool.
So, then each of these characters, Slippy, Peppy, and Falco, have some subtle functions that they all serve as incentive to keep them alive. Because there'll be points in stage where, like, oh no, Slippy's in trouble. He's got enemies chasing him. Shoot down the enemies that are chasing Slippy. And the same will happen to, like, Falco and Peppy. It's funny because Slippy is, like, supposed to be the inept one. And Falco's supposed to be the ace pilot of your group, and they get into trouble.
More than Peppy, which is just the old veteran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, because Slippy, it's good to keep him alive in a fight, because what he will do is he will reveal boss weaknesses when you get to the boss. Falco, occasionally, like, if you get into trouble, if you have an enemy chasing you, if Falco is still in the fight, he will come and help you out, occasionally, by getting the enemy off your tail. And then Peppy, if he's in the fight, he will offer advice on what maneuvers to use. Like if you're coming up at a point in enemy, he'll say, or at a point in a stage, he'll say, use a somersault. And like you pull up that maneuver and it'll get you like a bonus or give you an advantage on an enemy, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
I know there's kind of like a meme about this game where everyone talks about barrel rolling. Mm-hmm. As though it's slightly begin. I've never understood what any of that is all about.
Are they making
fun of this guy for constantly telling you to do barrel?
It's a line of dialogue that gets repeated. So, and it's a really early line of dialogue because barrel rolling in this game also acts as a deflection. If enemies are firing lasers at you and you barrel roll at the right time, it deflects the lasers and you don't take damage.
And at the beginning of the game, when he says do a barrel roll, it's literally the part where he teaches you how to do a barrel roll.
Right.
So, I mean,
so it's an important technique. To execute, and you know the line gets repeated, and you know, that's how it becomes a meme.
I see. So people heard somebody say something one time, and they're like,
"Yeah,
it's now funny because that is."
Yeah, remember this?
Yeah.
Everyone remember?
Hey, everybody remember? I remember that Star Fox 64.
I'm just going through my notes here to see if there's anything else I wanted to mention about this game. You mentioned before the little NPCs, Bill and Cat. They're little characters that appear for a mission or two. I think they're just in one mission each. But
so the dog is named Cat?
Yes. No, the
fuck
dog,
this game.
The dog is Bill, and the cat is Cat. I think that's worse, though. Don't you think it's worse that the cat is named Cat? Like, that's at least if the dog were named Cat, it'd be a little bit, like, smartassy.
I've been watching too many children's shows with my niece and nephews, because it just makes me think, Peg and Cat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with the niece and nephew.
They also went out of their way to remind you that Cat is, in fact, a lady. Because I look at these four things.
Are you looking at fan art? Assign
a gender to them, and I too did not begin to think of them in any kind of the sexual context. But this one, they've clearly dolled her up to make her look like she's a honey. Is this fox going after her? Because a fox and a dog are very similar.
Not as far as I know.
Okay.
No. Fox will get a love interest in a later game.
Oh, who and what?
It's Crystal. She's also a fox. It's not interesting.
Oh, okay. I don't think they allow interbreeding. Further proves the point. She can only be with another.
I mean, maybe they're just not attracted to different species. Like, human beings as a species are typically, I would say probably 99.99% of the time, attracted to other human beings.
That's a good point. Yeah, maybe you're right in that regard.
Hmm. It's probably an evolutionary thing. Like, you can't breed with a tiger. So in order to propagate the species, you only have an attraction to other humans.
Yeah. I don't know. Something's not adding up here.
Okay.
And I think the series should be explaining this to us, and it sounds like they're not. Peppy, or you're skipping too much dialogue to find out what the hell is actually
Peppy has a child. Peppy's child,
Is it a little piglet? What the hell is it?
No, it's a little bunny girl.
Well, then there you go. Doesn't that fucking answer the question, rabbit. Right? So what do you think the squirrel inside of her is? Probably a fucking bunny.
Slippy has a girlfriend.
And?
Her name is Amanda. She's a frog.
I'm telling you guys, this is clearly...
Yeah. So here's the thing. In Star Fox Command, which is a game for the DS, Crystal... who joins the Star Fox crew after Star Fox Adventures. She's in Star Fox Assault as well. She leaves the Star Fox group and joins Star Wolf. She is in a relationship with Panther, who is a panther.
Wait, and what is she?
A fox.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's really fucked up.
That's repulsive.
Yeah, did that start a war? Was that like the impetus for the game? Is that there was a panther? And
not as far as I know.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably the big motivation in all of these wars they seem to be having.
Maybe. I don't know why anyone would join Star Wolf. They have all these members who are constantly in flux. Because they keep dying. Yeah. Like, the two constant members of Star Wolf are Wolf and Leon, the iguana.
Yeah.
Huh.
Or it might be a chameleon.
From Resident Evil.
Yeah, so Leon Kennedy.
That'd be funny. He's the only human.
That'd be so good. That'd be amazing. But anyway, you have these NPCs, Bill and Cat. And what they do is... The idea behind having like these other like story characters who aren't actually members of the team was to make you feel like... you are in the middle of things. Like, there's already this war going on. There's other things happening that's not revolving around your team. And anyway, I bring this up because there's an interesting little Miyamoto interview where he talked to the staff, the game developers, about, like, oh, I want to have these NPCs in the game so that, you know, the player gets this certain feeling when they're playing through it. And he actually had to explain what NPC meant, because there weren't a whole lot of game developers on the staff that had ever played an RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just thought that was fun.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the four-player verse mode a little bit. It's split screen. Of course, makes use of the four controllers.
It's like a battle arena?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a battle arena. It's a dogfight all-range mode type thing. So... And multiplayer, like the four-player multiplayer was an important feature when they were making this game, because they wanted to make use of the four controller ports. Like, the N64 was conceived as being like this big couch co-op console. And you see that importance come through in games like Mario Kart 64, or in the next month or two we'll be talking about GoldenEye, which is another big multiplayer game.
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers, yeah, exactly. Majora's Mask, big multiplayer game there. So,
the one guy with the controller, the other guy with the giant notebook of notes that you need to make.
Yeah, your own bomber's notebook.
Your own bomber's notebook.
Someone to get the fresh Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Mountain Dew and Doritos.
Mm-hmm. Gamer fuel.
I love Doritos. Mountain Dew is piss water.
Agreed on both counts.
It was the first game, this Star Fox 64, first game to use the Rumble Pack, which is fun. They actually removed some Rumble Pack functionality, so it would be less confusing. The example that Miyamoto gave when he was talking about this is, in what we were talking about before, when you follow Falco through the waterfall.
Yes.
When you're following him through, there's the part where the big ship passes overhead. And what they did was, if you had the Rumble Pack inserted, of course, when the ship would pass overhead, it would rumble. To, I guess, like, add drama to the big ship moving. And they implemented something like that in several points in the game and ended up removing them because as they were playtesting, it just confused people. Like, it was rumbling. They think something was going wrong. Like, they were being attacked or something. So they had to, like, trim down on the amount of rumble that they were using. But, of course, rumble is now just a part of just about every game.
Yeah. At this point. Doesn't the Switch do rumble? I'm pretty sure that thing was shaking around in my hands.
Yep. They call it HD rumble. Because it's rumble that it's got multiple little mechanics in there to rumble in more specific areas of the controller.
Okay, great.
It's a feature.
It's such a weird thing to even exist in the first place.
Right.
It's like
just force feedback at all.
I feel like it could do just as much harm as good. And that it's like, oh my god, the controller's shaking. I'm looking at my controller. Oh my god, I'm playing a game.
Right. It is just like a really interesting, subtle thing that it's just so ingrained into video game controllers that we don't even think about it. But it is quite strange. And probably see like the worst examples of rumble on the DS. Because the DS actually had a rumble pack that you had to insert. Like if you remember like the original DS or the DS Lite had that Game Boy Advance. Cartridge slot. And they actually made a rumble pack that you inserted into the Game Boy Advance cartridge slot.
Oh, God.
And it was more effective at, like, making, like, just, like, chirping at you than actually making the system shake.
Yeah, that sounds like a total waste of technology.
They did weird stuff with handhelds.
In Celeste, that I was playing, you can actually turn down, there's a 150% or off with the rumbling.
Yeah.
And it's weird that you call it rumble anyways. I feel like that's probably it feels like that's the colloquial term we should call it, and not like what you really want to,
I think like the
what
the,
do you want to call it? Shake weight?
It's a motion immersion.
I think like the technical sort of like snooty like.
You just want to call it a mess.
Way of referring to it is force feedback. Is how
there you go. That's probably exactly. You're right. That is exactly what it is. I just couldn't think of the fucking name. But.
Well, I mean, it was conceived.
I like mine, motion immersion simulator.
So I'm looking at this mess that I have here in my hands.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like when they were doing that in the films in the 60s and stuff. They thought that there was going to be immersive to like intentionally blast smells into the room when certain scenes happen.
I wish that worked. I wish.
Or like just like water, so like water misting that kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody sneezes on screen and.
You go to a 4D ride. It was fantastic. I loved it.
No, there's a reason that things like...
Someone gets shot and then, a gun pops out of the thing.
rumbling chairs and 3D never stick around to become super mainstream is because the formula's been pretty much perfected.
Except for video games.
Right.
They love their goddamn force feedback.
Sure do. I can't remember what it was. It might have been the PlayStation 3 controller. Mm-hmm. The original launch PlayStation 3 controller didn't have force feedback. And it was like a thing. People wanted it, so they actually had to like re-release a PS3 DualShock that had the rumble in it.
It's so dumb.
Yeah. I mean, I hardly notice it when I'm playing a game. It doesn't bother me, but I'm also like, oh my god, this is so immersive. The controller is shaking.
I noticed when in Celeste, just because it was part of the options menu, and I was like, I'm turning this off.
I'm done with this.
Yeah, Celeste is on the list. I gotta get Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't played through Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight's good.
I need to get Shovel Knight.
That Hollow Knight game looks pretty popular. It's selling well, at least.
We've been playing it. Actually, I haven't posted that show yet. Me and Wes did a game night.
That show's a giant mess.
I think it turned out alright.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be okay. I mean, I'll probably trim it down to about 45 minutes, but we were playing Hollow Knight and talking about it as we were playing it.
Oh, okay.
So, we were just kind of experimenting. We plugged in a microphone. It was like, can we make a show out of this? Yeah, it's okay. It's a passable. Right. It is not the worst show we've ever done.
Well, off the top of your head, can you name the worst show we've ever done?
It might be this one. Or
you don't know that.
No, this is a good show. Star Fox 64 is a video game. Let's see. So, I did play through it a few days ago. I started up a second track as well. I didn't finish it because you can't save and come back to it. Every time you boot up the game, you have to start over from level one.
Do they give you like codes to progress?
Sure don't. So it's
wow. What's the runtime of the game?
You play through 7 missions, and of course there are branching paths. So like your second playthrough doesn't necessarily have to be the same as your first. You can take a different path and play through. I think there's only like one mission you have to play through every time. That's the opening.
And a lot of these missions branch. They're like, you know, like hidden areas, or like the mission I was telling you about with the flying saucer. You're trying to stop it from like blowing up a planet. If you fail, you're going one path. If you succeed, you're going in another. Like it's,
right.
So it's kind of like the SNES Star Fox.
Yeah. Regard, yeah, exactly.
It's kind of always like you just go down little paths.
Right. And so I wonder how many different combinations there are of playthroughs, because like one playthrough is not necessarily going to be identical to another. You can
jump off, take one rail onto another rail of a storyline,
right.
And
right,
okay.
And then even like the final boss, if you approach it from a different path, the boss fight seems different. Like you skip the whole dog fight in the beginning of the boss area, and you just pretty much head straight to him.
Yeah, there's one where you're just kind of flying through corridors, and your dead dad shows up to guide you through it.
Is he a fox?
He's a fox, yes.
Okay, you guys,
his name is James McLeod.
Really?
Yep. He named his son Fox.
That sounds very either Irish or Scottish.
Hmm. He's also a character in...
Well, he is a red fox.
He is a character in...
there you go.
F-Zero GX, that GameCube F-Zero game we were playing through. He's a character in that as well.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So, oh, God, there are humans.
Yeah. And he is a human in F-Zero. He is a fox child.
Oh, my gosh.
So some of the game. So when you turn the game off, you have to start over from the beginning. And I probably cleared out like the easy mode track, and got an hour and a half at most.
Mm-hmm.
So the game doesn't take long to get through at all. And you know, like if like you're playing at a high level, you can probably do it quicker than that. So I think the game would probably feel a bit more substantial if you didn't have to do that arcade run every time. If like you could select the mission you want to play, and then if you do like the secret exit, then you can just select that next mission and play through it, like look for a secret exit there. Mm-hmm. Just kind of hop back and forth between missions in order to get everything and be able to play any mission at any time.
So do you get a sense of that when you're playing through it? Like, oh, I never... You get to this one, it's like, oh, I usually do this one. What happens if I go down this other path? Like, does it give you that kind of branch where you kind of make the decision to be like, I'm going to do this mainline thing? Or you literally have to lose to go into the wrong branch?
There are some missions where it's like the script is, if you win, you go this way. If you lose, you go that way. Mm-hmm. So if you win the first time, you'd have to think about, okay, well, what if I lose? And then it'll take you down the alternate branch. So they don't really broadcast what it is you have to do in order to get your alternate path. Like, just in the first mission, for example, there are these, like, little geographic structures that you have to just fly under.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, Falco will be like, hey, I found the enemy over here, follow me.
Plus, you also have to, like, save Falco. At one point, he's being attacked.
Right.
So you have to save Falco, go through the thing, and then you have to move your ship to the right.
Yeah, you have to go through the waterfall.
At a certain point to go through and trigger it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, like, other ones are a little bit different as well. Like that train mission, I just watched it real quick. The boss fight, I thought this was really funny. Yeah, it's a little like a flying thing that comes out of the back of the train, and it's like tied to the train and just flies around. That's the boss fight. But right as that boss fight starts, there's a little lever on the side. If you shoot it, you switch the tracks.
Okay.
And you skip the boss fight entirely. The train goes straight into a building and explodes.
Nice. That's
so
kind of fun.
You don't even fight the boss. Like it's.
But that's kind of cool, though. It gives you a little fun little skip there.
Yeah.
But what I equate it to is like Super Mario World, a game that came out 6 years previous to this. Like, it'd be like if you were playing through Super Mario World and every time you wanted to go to Star Road, you had to play the level where you access to it over again and do the secret exit.
Yeah.
And I, like, again, like, they're making a different type of game here. They want to do, like, this arcade shooter. Mm-hmm. But I'd get so much more replay out of this. I would actually, like, try to like find every mission to get every secret exit if it would just give me, like, this map to choose from. Like, play whatever level you want. And that's something that Star Fox games won't do until Star Fox Zero on Wii U. Like, 20 years after this game came out, they finally just give you, here is your map. You can follow the route if you want, or you can find all the branching paths. And, like, here's a mission. It has a secret exit. If you don't find it, play it again. Mm-hmm. If you beat it the normal path, you can keep going, or you can play it again and go the secret way. If you find the secret way, good. You've unlocked that mission. You can go back to the normal one if you want. I just find that to be... It makes the game feel like there's more to it, rather than here's seven missions you're going to have to play through. Let's see. The game feels like really next gen in a lot of ways, like the way it controls and the visuals, of course. Like, this is certainly an upgrade over the Super Nintendo game, but there are Super Nintendo games that are doing things that this game doesn't do, like just the ability to save. Mm-hmm. It is 1997, yeah. And you can't save your progress. The game reviewed quite well. 7 and 8s out of 10. Or sorry, 8s and 9s out of 10. Pretty much across the board. Mm-hmm. It sold 4 million plus in its lifetime. Ends up being one of the best selling N64 games. They did remake it on the 3DS. That one was developed by Q Games, which is the studio that was founded by the original designer.
I did not know they did that.
Yep, of Star Fox and Star Fox 2. Dylan Cuthbert was the designer of Star Fox 1 and 2.
So he's the guy we got to go to for answers.
Yeah, about why they're animals. Yeah. He's the guy to talk to. Mm-hmm. We'll get him on the show. And it was actually, he and his company were not involved in the development of Star Fox 64, and he actually directed... And developed, his company developed a Star Fox 64 3D, which is the remake, which is kind of cool.
That is pretty cool.
So you can get a used copy of this game for about $15 on your Nintendo 64. Not too bad.
It's not that bad.
Yeah,
it's
just I've seen 4 million copies out there.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen it in like one of those used game stores for like $65.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That's a ripoff.
All right.
Was it like with all the original artwork and stuff?
Just a cartridge?
Yeah. Cartridge.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Yeah. It's also available on the Wii U Virtual Console. You can get it for $10, and they'll give you a save state, a suspend mode. So there you go. There's your method of saving right there.
Nice.
You can get a brand new copy of Star Fox 64 3D for your 3DS, a brand new in the box cartridge for $100.
That's expensive.
$100 for a 3DS remake of this game. Yeah.
Wow.
It must have gone out of print, or either that, or Amazon is really low on stock, and they've.
Someone's just kind of
jacked up the prices to reflect that. A used copy of the remake for 3DS is about $25 for cartridge only. Mm-hmm. Pricier than the original game, which is kind of funny. But yeah, I think this game has like the longest lasting legacy of any Star Fox game. This is the one that people remember. This is the game that's the standard bearer for the Star Fox franchise. They've never really one-upped this. They've always like tacked on these other ideas,
or like hopping out of the ship and running around with guns.
Yeah, like on foot missions.
Oh,
or
God.
Gyro controls, or like, getting down on a planet and fighting dinosaurs in Star Fox Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Touch controls in the 3DS version. Yeah, they've done some wacky stuff with
the double rumble anal suppository.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big deal.
So it's strange. This is one of those series. Nintendo has a few of these series in their stable where if they don't have a wacky idea to shake things up, they'll just kind of ignore it. And I don't know. I think that if this series were to take a step back and just kind of went with what was successful before, like the it'd probably be more successful than it has been recently. But that's why. 64 is still a standard bearer. This is the one that people remember the most fondly.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yep. So that's it.
I did have one one like little thing to bring up about it, and I shouldn't really do this because it's kind of insulting to the series to even mention this.
Do it.
But the PC has sort of explored this game style.
Yeah.
You know, there have been numerous Wing Commander installments. Mm-hmm. And there's one called Wing Commander Prophecy, which is actually really, really good. It came out just a few months after this for PC. It came out like December that year.
Okay.
Really good game and worth playing.
Hmm.
And again, it has more ships. You pick different ships and things like that. I don't know. Maybe my point is just that I don't think Nintendo's ever gotten this game style right.
It's true.
The Dogfighter.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in a year and a half, we're going to get Rogue Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a game like the Factor 5 develops, and yeah, they really nail it when it comes to these sort of like space flight combat games. Yeah. And yeah, it's an interesting series for Nintendo to tackle because it's almost like they did this to show off some stuff about the Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So they make this game like, hey, we can kind of fake polygons here. What are we going to do with it? And they make this Star Fox game. And then it kind of becomes a franchise. Mm-hmm. And it's a franchise that from the beginning, they're remaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they had a new idea for Star Fox 64. It's like, okay, well, we can make it look better. Mm-hmm. We can kind of like fulfill the vision of the original game. So, and but this is the only sort of, like, space shooter type of game that they make.
Mm-hmm.
So it is outside their wheelhouse. It's not a platformer or an adventure game or an RPG. Like, it's not... Yeah. It's definitely a genre that other people have perfected.
Yeah, you know, it's just like when you think of that style of game, you don't really think of Nintendo. I mean, maybe like they had. It's just that they feel like they did it. They got Star Fox.
Yeah,
you know, they got Star Fox, and they made some good Star Fox games. So they think that they're good on that.
Mm. Well, and it's also like first person shooters. Like they don't make first person shooters, and like I don't.
Look, because console first person shooters suck.
Well established.
Yeah. I mean, it's other consoles. Like, think about Xbox and Halo. It's almost synonymous. Hmm. Like, you think of them as
like, and, you know, other companies have cracked the code there. At this point, there's no point in Nintendo doing it. The only point in Nintendo like continue to make Star Fox games is to keep people who really love Star Fox happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a worthwhile endeavor in its own.
People that want to see anthropomorphized animals.
Exactly.
And ships.
Yeah. And I like the Star Fox series. I like Star Fox Zero, the newest one for Wii U. But it's like when you think about like the top tier franchises for these like, space shooter type games, like Star Fox probably doesn't make it into the top five. Maybe not even the top.
It probably 10. Does.
You think so?
Oh yeah, sure.
I don't know too much about this franchise.
Even if it's like a button fifth place, I feel like yeah. Probably,
okay.
Right.
Kind of gets in there on nostalgia.
Yeah, okay. I mean, because it is well known. I mean, I think anybody that spent any substantial time around a Nintendo product could tell you about.
Hmm. But not particularly well regarded. Like there's been quite a bit of like
mostly because you hang around me and I trash the game.
there's quite a bit of backlash around Star Fox Zero, yeah. Where people just outright trash that game. I think most of it's unfounded. I think that game is fine. Star Fox Assault, I think was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly right. Like I like Star Fox Command, but like these are games that I enjoy, and part of that might be because I don't play these types of games a whole lot. So like, hey, I'm flying around a little ship and I'm shooting things and it's fun.
Yeah.
Aren't I having a great time? I think like Star Fox 64 is the one that's pretty universally like regarded as good. The rest of them are very divided. You haven't made a game that's in this genre.
Well, credit to the longevity of the series, so they can continue to pump out mediocre games. It's still so well.
They keep on trying. They gave it their best effort.
Hey, they got you chicken walking, so they're thinking.
Chicken walking is so ridiculous. It's so good. It's also in Star Fox Zero. It's in Star Fox 2 and Star Fox Zero. They have that chicken walker, and it's so silly and fun.
Yeah, it's like a flightless bird.
Yeah.
It's like... Why would you do that?
Well, what are we going to turn our spaceship into? Chicken.
Yeah.
Of course. All right, so ranking. Here we go. All
right.
Where are we? Where are we with the ranking here? So right now, our ranking of N64 games from top to bottom here.
Okay.
Mario 64, Doom, Blast Corps, Mario Kart 64, Pilot Wings 64, Wave Race 64, Killer Instinct Gold, and Turok. Rounding out the bottom. Star Fox 64, where are we putting it here? Wes, why don't you make a suggestion here?
So it goes Mario 64,
Doom,
Blast Corps.
Then Mario Kart 64.
Mario Kart. I enjoy it more than Mario Kart. I think it's definitely
needs I would to agree. That. I would agree.
I don't know about Blast Corps. I know very, very little about that game, so I had to defer your judgment on that.
Okay.
I want to put it. What was number two?
Doom.
I mean, I put this at number two. I really like
it. I would too.
I really like this game.
Oh,
count me as a third agreement.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Easy.
I put this as number two.
I think even having not really played it, you know, the fact that it had 4 million sales, one of the best selling games, you're saying it's the best installment of a Star Fox ever.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, I think it's justifiable.
Probably a little bit more technically impressive.
Doom 64, way overachieved.
Mm.
I don't think in the long run it's going to be considered a top tier, you know, N64 game. I think it's just way better than what people give it credit for.
I think Doom 64 is a good achievement. I think that Star Fox 64 is probably a little bit more technically impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. We don't need to justify. Like, yeah, we're all
agreeing.
Yeah.
Second best game.
Cool.
So far.
Do we want to put Dark Rift, I forgot the name of the game for it. Like, do we want to put it on the list? Like, is this game worth, like...
What's the last, like, four games on our list?
Pilot Wings, Wave Race, Killer Instinct, Turok.
It comes down to, is it above or below Turok?
I think Turok is maddeningly bad.
Hmm.
Dark Rift was just boringly bad.
Okay.
So I would put it just above. I would put it... And it's actually kind of sad that it is side-by-side with the only other fighter we have on our list in Killer Instinct, because Killer Instinct is substantially better than this game.
Well, you know, as we get tomorrow, this is stuff will separate.
But yeah, I think you can go ahead and pencil that one in. And you didn't say Hexen either. We did play Hexen.
Oh, we did play Hexen. Where do we put Hexen? Shit. I'm going to have to listen to a previous show. And when we do another N64 show, we'll start with the official ranking.
Okay.
To kick us off. Because yeah, we did do Hexen as well. But anyway, next up is the official show.
Really?
Yeah, we'll round out the month with that. We'll have games to talk about. We've got Octopath Traveler, which I put quite a bit of time into.
I cannot wait to play that game.
And it
is pure willpower.
Wait, you haven't officially talked about this game yet?
No.
You did a whole thing. You did a dedicated podcast.
Five minutes. 5 minutes on the developer.
Uh-huh. Your goddamn boyfriend.
And I haven't played in a couple days. But just to give you an idea of what has happened here, I played 24 hours. I put 24 hours into the game over the span of 7 days.
That's a lot of time.
So out of a week, one whole day of that week was spent playing this game.
It's true.
Gosh. But yeah, so I like it. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's one other game. Anyway, it's escaping me right now. It doesn't really matter. So we'll do.
You also are about to wrap up Battle Chasers.
Yeah, which we'll probably have to address in a mini show at some point.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about the official.
Yeah.
Oof.
But what we can do is we can talk about Ryan Switch, because that'll be
no way.
Yeah,
we can talk about Ryan Switch.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, that'll wrap up the shows for a month, and then we'll start it all back again with the Pokemon show. Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.